TaxPod, der Steuerpodcast. All right, welcome to another TaxPod episode. This time again about customs, and we are very happy and glad to have well-known speakers and guests in our podcast. And this is Chuck Crowley and Mark Sagrist from Sandler, Travis and Rosenberg in the United States. And Jens is obviously in this podcast as well. A warm welcome to you. It's great to have you back here. And this dates back to 2018, when we had the first tariffs hit by Trump administration number one. And back in the day, we all already saw the need to talk about customs. And I suppose when we saw the need back in the days, then with respect to the massive increase, obviously there's a need to talk about customs today, even more so. So, Mark, Chuck, welcome to the TaxPod again. It's great to have you.
Well, thank you so much. We're glad to be here. And yes, things have changed dramatically. I was just mentioning a moment ago that Mark and I are now more popular than George Clooney.
Yeah, we guess so. And maybe for all our audio, Mark and Chuck, these are, well, great lawyers, and Senator Travis Rosenberg is, well, I think this number one when it comes to customs in the U.S. So we are very happy to have you here and to hear about your experience and what do you expect in the future with regard to customs coming from the U.S.
Great. You know, well, I'll just say that what we hope to accomplish in the few minutes that we have with you and our participants today is just to give you a sense of where things are going, because, yeah, again, things are changing so dramatically. And there are things that we can do to minimize the duties and ensure compliance. You know, if the goods in the poor past were duty-free, now that they're subject to tariffs, it's a sea change in the relationship between the tax advisors, between us, your freight forwarder, your broker, and all the people within the company to work in collaboration. That said, Mark, maybe you can sort of give a sense of the landscape now.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having us. It's great to be on again. We were speaking before here. I think the last time we were on this podcast was back in 2019 when the Section 301 tariffs on Chinese origin goods went into effect. And I remember everyone kind of calculating and figuring out what the tax liabilities would be or the duty liabilities would be at a 25% clip, which those have been in place for quite some time now. And, you know, looking back retroactively now, those look relatively mild compared to where we are today. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit today, and we're happy to share information about some potential duty saving strategies throughout the webinar as well, or the podcast as well. But also, maybe we can level set a little bit on where we are, because there's just been so much going on here in the U.S. So kind of turning back the clock to Trump 1.0, his first administration, that's when the president utilized Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974. And that was targeted specifically at China, focused on the alleged theft of U.S. intellectual property. And so that was, you know, a countrywide specific target, ratcheted through different lists of products that have now been raised up to about 25% on most goods coming in from China. Some are subject to a 7.5%. And I bring up those percentages only because those have been around for quite some time, and I envision those holding for quite some time as well. So that, again, related to U.S. intellectual property and Chinese origin goods. The next activity that also happened during Trump's first term was really this a different statute, a different provision on steel and aluminum tariffs under Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act of 1962. And this is really kind of an older Cold War-related law that was in place here in the United States to ensure that the U.S. had enough steel and aluminum to make the planes and the tanks and the trucks and everything that it needed as part of kind of that Cold War period. Those were put on hold immediately after those went into effect. The Trump administration entered into a variety of international agreements with countries to try to either completely eliminate or put a quota to a certain level on those types of tariffs. So the EU, Canada, Mexico, South Korea, and a variety of other countries entered into these immediate agreements to not be subject to those tariffs. The issue is that now in 2025, during Trump 2.0, we've still got those Section 301 tariffs that I talked about. And the 232 tariffs on steel and aluminum are back, right? All of those agreements that were reached under the first Trump administration have now been effectively rescinded. There's no exclusion process. So, you know, it's raising a lot of questions for companies that, you know, for years really didn't think their products were subject to any tariffs. Now they're subject to a quite a substantial tariff if they fall within those categories. There's others we can talk about as well. Chuck, I don't know if you want me to briefly comment on the IEEPA tariffs with China and others, or if you wanted to do that.
No, please go continue to do that. Thanks.
Yeah. So just really quickly to kind of close the loop there, that was the past, right? Section 301 and Section 232 tariffs. Now we've got this completely new landscape where the 232 tariffs are back, the 301 tariffs are back, and now the president is using effectively a third law known as IEEPA, or the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. And that's kind of targeted in three different directions. One on Mexico and Canada, and then against China as well. And the initial use of this IEEPA statute was targeted towards fentanyl production and a migrant crisis at the border. And so the president used this statute to impose these tariffs on goods coming in from Mexico and from Canada, as well as on goods coming in from China. Thankfully, they have been paused for Mexico and Canada for goods that qualify for the USMCA free trade agreement, the North American free trade agreement here. But they are still in effect on Chinese origin goods. And then the most recent update, I would say, would be these reciprocal tariffs that everybody has been talking about over the last week. And that's where the president imposed a 10% baseline tariff across the board on pretty much every country in the world, and then put in separate reciprocal rates based on trade deficits, based on currency manipulation concerns, VAT tax issues, so they say, on a variety of other countries. And so the about face has really come this week, where those were put into place, you know, on all of these other countries that we had trading deficits with. Those have now been removed. I should actually say lowered down to the baseline level of 10%, except for China, which has now been actually ratcheted up to the highest level it's been in over a century.
So maybe, Mark, that's amazing to have this landscape on now, coming from a practical perspective. This seems to be a lot of change for your clients, or for any clients that might have contact to you for the first time now. What are actually the first steps you have to evaluate when you are a client and you have the feeling something has worsened for you here? How do you actually scrutinize the supply chains? How do you find alleviations, maybe? I guess this is the most interesting part, probably. Can you do something about it, or is it something that hits you anyhow and you basically cannot... change your structures in order to be hit less hard by the tariffs.
Yeah, and what would be very interesting is, are there any exemptions? Yeah, as we have some clients who are investing heavily in the US, but that also comes with bringing machines from Germany or Europe to the US. And the question is, would this also be subject to those customs, which would be bad, yeah, because they're investing a couple of billion in the US and they need those manufacturing machines because they are not available in the US. Yeah, put it like this. And are there any exemptions?
Yeah, Chuck, do you want to address that maybe first?
I think this is an area that's getting a lot of attention, particularly with our clients from Germany and the EU, as well as obviously Asia, because of the tariffs, they're looking for ways to lawfully reduce the tariffs. Since a lot of these tariffs now apply to many, many different tariff classifications, you can't re-pigeonhole the products into a different category ordinarily as easily as maybe you had in the past. There are different types of exemptions, but what it is, for me at least, and maybe Mark can echo this, has been the valuation issues. How do you, between particularly related parties, how do you deal with the valuation now? In the past, you had set it up for customs and not really thinking about tariffs. So sometimes those valuations were done purely for tax reasons, and they didn't consider, well, maybe the impact of royalties and other things that have a customs impact. So today we're looking at what is the functionality of some companies and how they're structured, so that maybe if, again, we have goods that mean that in inventory you've got some items, some parts that are from China and some from the Germany and some from elsewhere, you don't commingle them and then have an issue when the goods come into the United States that customs sees this as a major compliance problem, because again, you treated the German part the same as the Chinese part, and there's a, you know, a claim that this was done maybe in violation of US law. So the valuation, how you come up with it, is extremely important right now, particularly with related parties.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck, I think, is raising a really important point here, because in the past, you know, you'd really kind of walk through an exercise with a client. You'd say, first off, you just have to figure out what the product is, right? What's its classification? Where is it classified under the tariff schedule? Because at that time, some HTS codes were subject, some HTS codes were not subject. And so if you had a legal basis to reclassify your product in a different provision, you might be able to escape these tariffs. You know, another thing companies looked at was origin. Can I possibly change the origin from being a Chinese product or from being a German product to being a Mexican product or a Canadian product, which also parlays into this question of, does it qualify for a free trade agreement at a certain point? But now, because these reciprocal rates are pretty much across the board to every other major trading country in the world, they're you know, the origin question, you might be able to leapfrog and get out of being Chinese, but now you're stuck in a different provision, potentially at a much lower rate, thankfully. But you're still, you know, subject to some type of baseline tariff, it seems like, under this new regime. And so, you know, to Chuck's point, if you can't really change the classification, or you're unable for one reason or another to change the origin, the next question is, can you change the value? And there's a lot of opportunity for companies to kind of lawfully declare a potentially lower value at the time of entry, which also comes with a lot of questions as well. So,
yeah, I would expect between related parties, I think there is now a limelight on the transfer pricing, yeah, because through the transfer price, which is then subject to the tariffs, I think you may reduce your tariffs. And as for example, so a client of ours asked, so we are just producing and sell our products from Germany to the US. So is there any way, and I would expect, so if we put a sales function maybe to the US, then the transfer price should be lower, because I have then an amount for the sales function already in the US. So I think that maybe could be an easy option. Yeah,
I'm finding that the biggest problem that's coming right now, Jens, is miscommunication. There's so much information, either through AI or anything, that's coming across to that people are overloaded, and they're looking for fast answers to complicated questions. So they'll say, well, maybe the part isn't necessarily $1 million or $10 million. Maybe it's $5 million because 50% of it is services. So I will just have two invoices. And they look for simple solutions, and they are not coordinating with others. Maybe in the past it was duty free, and this would have not gotten a lot of scrutiny. Today it's getting that attention. So again, I think there's a lot of information being exchanged right now. Some of it very bad, and this is a really need to go back to work together to make sure that someone isn't saying, for example, in the United States, if we're seeing an epidemic of Chinese companies saying, look, don't import it yourself. We'll import it for you, and then resell it in the United States. Well, if it looks too good to be true, it usually is, right? And if the products now without the Chinese tariff are sold competitively, when you know that if you imported it, you've had to pay 125%, you probably should be aware that something is going on that's untoward.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And And further to the transfer pricing point, you know, we have a lot of clients who are selling, you know, directly from overseas. Maybe it's from Canada, maybe it's from Europe. And they're selling directly to a to an unrelated U.S. customer, but they do have a U.S. entity. And so then they start thinking, to your point, Jens, is it possible that I could now sell to my U.S. entity at a transfer price and potentially park some of that margin in the U.S.? But, you know, it's almost like a game of, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the game of limbo in the European Union there, but it's kind of a how low can you go, because you want to make sure that you're obviously declaring the lowest lawful price at the time of entry, but it's got to be lawful, right? You can't violate your transfer pricing agreements. You also can't violate the related party value statute here in the United States. And so there's always this conflicting balance of trying to reduce tariff liability, but at the same time, ensure compliance with those laws.
Of course, of course. And I'm coming back to your question mark with regard to the origin, because this is what clients obviously ask. Yeah, they're saying, well, as for example, for copper or any other material, could we set up a company maybe in the United Arab Emirates in Dubai, and which would be tax-free? And well, we are concentrating there the sourcing function. Yeah, and then maybe there are this company is buying copper and then send it to the US and around the world. Would that have any impact on the customs?
I don't know if it would change the origin of the copper, but it could potentially change the value that's being assessed. So for instance, if the copper is being produced in country A, but that copper is being sold to a new trading entity that's kind of been set up in Dubai for a particular value, and then is being resold to a US company at a higher value, that really raises this question of now there's two sales, right? There's the US importer who's buying from a Dubai entity. Well, it could, right? Chuck and I spend a lot of time working with companies to implement first sale duty saving strategies. And maybe this is kind of a good parlay into that at this point. But back in 1988, Len Rosenberg, one of the founding members of our firm, actually won a court case here in the United States that kind of created this first sale concept. And basically what it says is that if there are multiple sales of goods before they're imported into the United States, the U.S. importer may be able to utilize the earlier or first sale value at the time of entry. Obviously, you have to meet certain legal requirements before you can do that. But if that value is lower than the price that the U.S. importer is paying, you've just reduced your duty liability by the difference in those two transaction value prices. Right. So that Dubai entity may serve a role in that function, assuming it's a bona fide buyer and reseller. But we would just obviously have to look at the facts of those situations to see if that actually works. But again, I don't think it would change the origin unless the copper was now all of a sudden coming from Dubai, which I would doubt.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. But something you guys are very familiar with is that earlier sale, particularly with this related party, we have to show that it's at arm's length. A concept you are so familiar with, and doing that is quite an exercise. But again, on a matchbook, if you say, well, I'm going to save $10 million in duties, you might say, yes, it's very easy for me to justify going and coordinating with our service providers to recognize this. One of the big things that we're finding in at least working with European companies is they oftentimes have can work in a progressive way to say, well, there are different functions and maybe we could set up a middleman company within Europe, maybe outside of Europe, maybe reduce taxes at the same time we're saving duties. But going to Getz's point, first and foremost, compliance. We have to do this in a very conservative way.
Sure. But coming back to my question with which I started, the idea of those customs is that the foreign non-US countries bringing production to the US, and manufacturing and services, and so, which is a good idea for the US. So, and as I said, what we are seeing is that our German companies, also for other reasons, because we have also our problems here in Germany, they are investing in the US as the biggest market, and they're great chances in this market. So, and as you know, I'm an American by heart, at least. As I said, they need to send those big machines from Europe to the US, and there should be a solution that this is tariff-free. Is there any way how we can structure it in a way that this is not subject to customs and tariffs?
Yeah, you're raising a really great point. I can see Chuck shaking his head thinking too. So to give you a little perspective, right now, under the current reciprocal tariffs, the baseline tariffs, the IEEPA tariffs that I talked about, the Section 232 tariffs, and potentially even the 301 tariffs on China, there is no exclusion for machinery coming in. I will say, though, for the 301 tariffs on Chinese origin goods, there was a notice and comment that was published earlier this year that gave importers an opportunity to provide comments to the U.S. Trade Representative saying, if you are importing a particular piece of machinery or equipment under Chapter 84 or 85 of the Harmonized Tariff Schedule of the United States, let us know. We may create kind of an exclusion for that process. I'm guessing that would be a short time period, you know, maybe like a 1 or 2 year period where you can bring your machinery in, and then there's a clap back where maybe that tariff goes back into place after a certain period of time. We've yet to see those exclusions come out. But at this point, there are no current exclusions for, you know, imported machinery. That would just be any other good that's being imported into the United States, and as a result would be subject to the applicable rate of duty of its origin.
Another thing to consider is that we have an office within our firm that looks at these things called foreign trade zones. And essentially, it's like putting an umbrella over your operation and saying that there are certain things that you're allowed to do there. A lot of processing you're allowed to do within my operation, now that I call it a foreign trade zone, which is a legal fiction. It's saying within that operation that yesterday used to be in Texas, now it's outside the territory of the United States. So I take things, like you said, the machinery perhaps, bring it into the foreign trade zone, process them, they do this a lot in the auto industry. And then only then, when the article is finished or out of inventory, you enter the commerce of the United States, which hopefully by that time, maybe the duty rates will also, again, something to consider. It's right now our foreign trade zones are totally filled because a lot of people are using them for purposes of working with these tariffs.
Yeah. And is there any possibility, I know this for aircraft and for yards, as you know, we have a client of ours, he just bought an aircraft from the US, and thank God we did it 2 weeks ago. Otherwise, this could have been subject to your new taxes and tariffs. But my question is, sometimes we are just importing those goods temporarily. So would that maybe a solution for some, maybe machines, products, to do it on a temporary basis?
Yes, it is. So there's something in the United States known as a TIB, or a temporary importation under bond, usually falling under Chapter 98 of the tariff schedule. And so a lot of the newer tariffs have carve-outs, right? Whether it's maybe your goods qualify for the USMCA free trade agreement, or maybe they qualify under a lawful use of a Chapter 98 provision, which could be something like a temporary importation under bond. Now, clearly there's liability for the bonding company, for the surety companies, for your broker to ensure that, you know, if you're bringing it in, that you're re-exporting it out within a year, or you're asking for the qualified extensions that you're going to need to get that extended out. But it's a possibility. It's not going to be applicable to every one of these tariffs, but certain ones it could apply for sure.
Okay, interesting.
Yes, and sometimes international CARNAs provide that function as well. But again, that we'd have to look at that case by case. It's a pain in the neck because you've got to get the CARNA on a shipment by shipment basis, and then when you export it, you know, you've got to cancel the CARNA. It just requires another level of detail that a lot of companies have never had to do because tariffs were not significant to the company's operation, and now they are.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it could be very expensive. Yeah, guts. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to come back to this practical aspect again. If you think, does it make sense for a client to sort of perform a sanity check, whatever it takes, or do you see people coming to you with very specific questions on these customs now? I just wonder what would be first steps to sort of try to improve the situation.
I
almost started laughing because I thought to myself, everybody needs a sanity check about this point in time. I mean, there's just so much going on. I think for a lot of companies, the first question is really just to figure out what you're subject to as of today, because this has been changing so much, so rapidly, so frequently. You know, I mean, in the span of a week, a company might not have been subject to something and now they are, or the rate has changed significantly. And so just understanding what your products are, what you're actually importing into the United States, what could be done to potentially reduce those tariffs or mitigate those tariffs or defer those tariffs in some manner, is really just kind of the first level set. I think for Chuck and I, a lot of it is just getting to know the clients, understanding their business, understanding the types of products that they have, because some products, you know, the same company could be importing a product today, you know, on shipment number one, it's subject to the reciprocal tariffs. But on shipment number two, because it's a different type of product under a different classification, it's subject to a steel and aluminum 232 tariff. Or some of them say, hey, I import automotive parts and components. Those are technically subject to a 232 action right now, but that doesn't go into effect until May. And so it raises this question, well, then am I subject to the reciprocal tariffs until this thing goes into effect? You know, am I paying two different rates over a two different month period? So there's a lot to work through, but I think, yeah, a sanity check, a check-in with Chuck or myself or anybody else is really what's needed, just to level set on where we are and where we also think this stuff's going.
Maybe one more question with respect to compliance. I mean, hitting the right customs rate in the end and declaring correctly is important, but you have a timing issue here, don't you? And I wonder how fast do you have to be? Yeah, how good do your declarations have to be in the first place? How in general is declaration practice with respect to customs in the United States, maybe back in the days, but now after these changes, obviously?
I think there's a risk line here in terms of where you minimize, maximize risk. There, you know, part of it depends on the company culture, how much risk are you willing to take. But if you're importing, for example, products all from China, then there maybe the risks are greater than they were a few years ago. Again, you do not have anybody in the compliance function in the United States, maybe the risks are greater than you imagine. Maybe if you've already been notified by customs, you're going to be audited. Maybe the risks are greater. I would suggest the first place to start is getting the dialogue going, because many companies, again, have so relied on their freight forwarder and their broker to handle this, and that will not work with U.S. Customs anymore. Again, the penalties are 200% of the loss of revenue to 800%, and, you know, they can go back 5 years. So my suggestion is that we at least find out where you stand, so that you can say, okay, there are some risks I'm willing to take today. I'll address them tomorrow. But human nature is normally that you address a problem when it occurs. And that I don't think is ideal in this situation with customs.
Yeah, and just from a practical perspective on that, when goods come into the United States, you know, that you declare a value, you declare a classification on the date of entry, there's just so much back and forth right now. I think there's going to be a gap period where a lot of companies make mistakes, right? They declare as not being subject to a particular tariff when they should have been subject to a tariff, or maybe they were subject to the wrong tariff and they should have been subject to another one. So if that happens, companies should be monitoring that, working with their customs broker to make sure that they are filing the appropriate kind of post-summary corrections to correct those entered values. So you do have a time period when goods come in before they liquidate, before they become finalized in the customs system, to go in and actually make a change to the entry. But after those entries have liquidated, you're kind of out of luck. And if you owe money and you should have paid more, now you're kind of in a different realm of what we would kind of consider a prior disclosure territory, where you might need to report something out voluntarily to customs.
One more question from my side. It's not a technical question, it's more a question. Well, I know you are not a magician, but I would like to have a view, a glimpse to the future. What do you expect? Are those tariffs now in place, are they for eternity, or is it just something which the president uses in order to bring maybe Europe to the table? And so we may expect that this is ending soon. So what's your expectation?
Yeah, I honestly wish I could give you a crystal ball answer. But for example, today I see that the president is saying that if Mexico doesn't give us more water for our agriculture, then there may be higher tariffs. So I think it's going to be much more fluid than in the past, where we could rely on tariffs for the future in terms of setting up factories and the supply chain globally. I think it's going to be that now we're going to have to keep a clear head and work together in terms of understanding that tariffs can be much more fluid.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, on the reciprocal tariff front, you know, the trade deficit, reciprocal tariffs, baseline tariffs that we were talking about that are most recently implemented. Again, we don't know for sure. Nobody has a crystal ball. But what seems to be happening is kind of this shift and this split between trade-related reciprocal tariffs based on water from Mexico, Chuck mentioned, from you know, trade deficits, currency manipulation issues. Those are kind of one more fluid area versus these 232 tariffs, these Section 301 tariffs that are really much more industry-specific, country-specific, that seem to have a longer staying capacity, in my view, than maybe reciprocal tariffs that can be negotiated, they can come down, they can go up, they can come down, versus kind of industry or sectoral tariffs that might be in place for a longer period of time. But we'll just have to wait and see.
That's interesting, but that could be an issue for the European Union, yeah? Because as you have already, I think I have seen it, Frau von der Leyen, she has offered a free trade agreement, which is interesting because the last idea of a free trade agreement, which I really would love, that was, I think, the Europeans, they tried their best to not have it in place. And now they are coming up with that idea. But if this is true, what you have said, Mark, I don't think that will be enough for Trump, for the president, to put these tariffs away. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right now, it seems like a 90-day race for every country to come knocking to the White House, to the U.S. Trade Representative's office, trying to broker some type of deal. So we'll have to watch that over the coming months. I find it interesting that these tariffs have actually created so much more work, obviously, for the administration now that they're going to be busy working on over the next 90 days. But we'll be tracking that closely, and hopefully, you know, cooler heads prevail, and we all get out of this together.
Yeah.
Maybe one question that is also more emotional. What do your clients say? Are they terrified, or especially your domestic US clients who are importing, or do they find it okay? They can cope with it. It's really would be really interesting to like have your. I mean, you see a lot of voices, and if you sort of reflect them.
Yeah, I've been getting phone calls from 4 a.m. on till midnight, being last night as an example, because people are panicking. They're trying to set prices to their ultimate customers, and the prices that they set yesterday are totally gone today. So it's causing a great deal of anxiety throughout the supply chain, from the people who manufacture the goods and all the way through to the customer in the United States, who now doesn't know whether they'll be able to buy the shirt or the toy at $1 or $10.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of companies who maybe overnight or over the course of a week went from being economically viable to not being economically viable anymore. And Chuck and I, we hear that on every call. And so we try to be as tactical as we can about it, but there's also an emotional piece that you brought up, Gutz, about just hearing the stress and the anxiety from folks when you speak to them all day long and night. For instance, there was a provision known as de minimis, it's still around for the time being, I'll say, that would allow companies to bring in low value shipments without the payment of duty. You know, you think of socks or underwear or glasses or things like that, but if those are coming in from China, that is going to be closing on May 2nd, and the Commerce Secretary is looking at potentially closing it for other countries as well. And so, you know, if overnight your product went from being duty-free where you could quote a price to now being subject to a 100%+ reciprocal tariff because it's coming in from China, it just makes it economically unviable to even continue to sell that. So a lot of pressure and a lot of stress for a lot of companies, and you know, just feel that as we work with them.
That raises an interesting, maybe legal question. From a legal point of view, would it be possible to adjust a price which you have agreed on with your customer? Yeah, because if you have agreed on a price, let's say 100, and then you are getting this 125% tariffs from products from China, I think there might be a way to say, well, this price isn't working anymore because it's going to kill me. Is this from a legal point of view possible?
Yes. I mean, again, there has to be some pain absorbed by a lot of parties in the supply chain. So if you need to adjust the price, it should be documented, though, because if, again, people are getting very creative and they're saying, well, I'll just adjust the transfer price in a way that's immediate, it may not pass muster later when during an audit. So I say just maybe figure out ways to adjust that price, but do it in a logical, methodical way.
Yeah, and also you're raising kind of a larger, what I'm considering like a macroeconomic issue too, which is I can't even imagine the chilling effect on a U.S. economic purchaser, you know, somebody buying socks or underwear or whatever it is. If I knew I went online and I bought something today for $100,
yeah,
but then there was a term and a condition at the bottom of that purchase that said, we have the right to charge your credit card $200 if these tariffs go up. I mean, the chilling effect on the U.S. purchaser and what that could mean downstream could be pretty monumental. So all of these things are interconnected. And I think that's something that's really come out of this too, is it's really highlighting how interconnected the world is through our supply chains and our countries, and obviously has a really, really big effect.
It's very, very interesting for me. Back in the days when I studied tax law, I had quite some seminars on customs as well. I don't know why we had to do that, but I studied in Münster, which is quite a central place for customs in Germany. And back in the days, it says, okay, the only important thing about customs is security. Security with respect to the goods. The professor said, the worst thing that can happen to supply chains is that you have a security issue like some bomb, like chemical weapons going off on a boat, on a container ship, and they're saying it's somewhere there. We don't say which boat it's going to be on, and then all harbors closing down for all ships and basically supply chains collapsing. And for me, it's super interesting that this was this very clear assessment in 2013. It's all security, it's not rates. And now we are just a couple of years later, we are in a world where it's not security anymore, or it's still security, but rates got back up to of importance.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Right. I've noticed I'm talking to boards and CEOs when in the past I would talk to someone in the legal counsel's office. It's risen in terms of importance to most of our clients, so that we're no longer the ugly stepchild of the tax department.
Yeah, since you look like George Clooney.
we can only hope.
Anyways, yes, I don't know. Do you have anything
very good
else? Or
thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Same here.
Yeah, very, very interesting insights. And well, maybe we have a touch point soon if something changes. Yeah, but it's a very, very amazing to have your thoughts on this issue for our clients and our listeners.
Again, let's continue to work together, because I don't think our clients are going to benefit if they don't figure out a tax tariff solution.
True. All right.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having us on. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. It was a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark.
TaxPod, der Steuerpodcast.